Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are just as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They're milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Just a reminder that Diet Starts Tomorrow is a podcast for entertainment purposes only. It is not a medical podcast and does not constitute medical advice. Always seek the advice of a physician or a health professional. Hello and welcome to Diet Starts Tomorrow. I'm Emily.
And I'm Lauren.
And we're so psyched for today's episode.
We're pumped.
Today is Christmas.
We're meeting Mother.
We're meeting Mother, one of them. So we are having Elise Resch on the pod in just a minute. And if you're not familiar with her, she is the co-author of Intuitive Eating, which is the Bible for Lauren and me.
Yes.
And something that we talk about all the time on the show. So I can't wait to talk to her. And first of all, I want to talk to you about this, Lauren,
sure.
But I also want to ask her about this when we talk to her. I've been seeing randomly people kind of misinterpreting what intuitive eating is.
You mean literally everybody?
Yes. Well,
no shade to literally everybody.
Everybody. Like I keep hearing people say to me directly, like, oh, I could never do that because I would eat too many chips.
Yeah.
And
that's what everybody says. They go, I would eat the whole sleeve. And I'm like, have you tried it? It's okay if you don't want to. Again, we're not giving advice, but it's just, it does.
But it, like, have you tried it?
It
though?
Gets, I know, it just, it does get frustrating when that's just the go-to thing. And I'm like, side-eyeing it.
But
a
like,
little.
Also, if you're so scared that you're going to eat a whole sleeve of cookies, then maybe it might be worth trying,
yeah.
You know, taking the guardrails off of the food.
Yeah.
And it's just, there's so much more that goes into it. It's not just about eating whatever you want. It's also about observing how you feel and really paying attention to your hunger and your fullness and your emotions. And
it can't be explained in a podcast episode either. Like, it's nothing.
Right.
Like, I think that's why we get so frustrated, honestly, Emily, is because it really is this thing that you have to do for years to kind of understand. And it's so hard when people ask, like, what is it? And it's like the easiest way to explain it sounds like a diet. You know,
you stop
when you're full and you eat when you're hungry. And
right. Like, so some people kind of interpret it as a diet.
Yeah.
And this is what I've been seeing lately. I actually sent you the profile. I'm not going to say who this woman is, but
right.
She calls herself an intuitive eating coach.
Okay.
But every video you look at, it's like, do you want to know why you're not skinny like your friends?
Stop it.
It's because you're using food to cope with your emotions.
She's using the word skinny as like a good thing?
Oh, yeah. No. It's, she straight up said, I really want to say this
with
woman's name, but I'm not going to.
Intuitive eating.
Yeah. Like, she's like, intuitive eating will help you lose the last 10 pounds. Intuitive eating will help turn you into that skinny bitch. She straight up says to the camera, she's like, you know that skinny bitch that eats 2 bites of a protein bar and she's good? You could be like that.
Okay.
You could be that skinny bitch.
I can't listen to this anymore.
With
I know you're
eating. No, but it makes me so mad. I literally watched all of this woman's videos because I was like, she must be joking, right? Like there must
be. No, she's taking a beautiful thing and corrupting it, just like with everything else, with religion and spirituality and improv. sorry, some improv theaters get toxic.
Everything goes back to improv.
It's like you take, it's just something we do as humans. We like take this pure thing that people will connect to and grow from and learn from, and then they use it as a weapon. And it's like, can we stop doing that?
Yeah. I am seeing it all over the place and it's driving me crazy because no, intuitive eating is not supposed to help you lose
it's
the last 10 pounds.
Diet.
It doesn't help you lose the last 10 pounds. It heals your relationship to food. It's completely different than a diet.
I get why it messes with these people's heads, though, because a lot of times intuitive eating will result in weight loss.
Sometimes,
and so it's making this like click go off in the brain where they're like, weight loss. That means diet. Let's make some money. And it's like, no, and doesn't always result in weight loss. Like,
right. And then I've heard some experts talk about it. And sometimes there's this thing called the hunger fullness diet, which is basically like intuitive eating co-opted into it's a diet. So like we're paying attention to our hunger cues and we're stopping when we're okay. full and we can never, ever eat more than we want.
It's literally a wolf with a lamb's hat on it. It's a yes. diet with a hat on that says intuitive eating.
Exactly.
Bitch, I see you in that hat.
Yeah, exactly.
The hat's right there.
It's two people. One of them is on the other one's shoulders and they have a trench coat. And the trench coat says intuitive eating. But then you open it up and it's just two diets.
It's just two diets standing on top of each other trying to get into a movie.
Exactly. So I really want to ask Elise about what she thinks of that. You know, the way that intuitive eating really has taken on a life of its own.
It probably makes her even more angry. I just realized, like, or maybe it doesn't, we're sitting here being like, that's annoying. And it's like, it's everything she like brought to life being manipulated.
Yeah, I don't know. We will find out.
We'll find out.
We're about to, you know, talk to her. It's going to be a real meeting of the minds. I'm super excited for you guys to hear this episode. So why don't we just get into it?
Let's get into it. Welcome, Elise. We're so happy to have you with us here today.
Well, thank you for inviting me and to be on again. It's just a privilege. Thank you.
Yeah, we're excited because we're, you know, I've not gotten to interview you yet, and I'm like a huge, is fan the right word for like scientific professional person who changed your life? Like, I'm a fan.
I would think so. You're a patron, you're a fan. Lauren and I, for context, we're both intuitive eaters and we've read the book and we both would say it's changed our lives.
It has. It really has.
So we're really excited. I'm sure you hear that all the time, though.
And I'm thrilled. Every time I hear it, it's been 30 years now almost.
Wow.
And I get emails. I get all kinds of communication letting me know that people's lives have changed. And it's my mission.
Yeah.
It's why I'm here on this planet.
It must be hard to stay humble.
No, I am. It was funny. In 2019, there was a big talk given at the Academy for Nutrition and Dietetics conference, and there were about 2,000 people in the room, which was shocking when I got up on the stage and I gave the talk with my co-author. And afterwards, people were coming up, these younger dietitians going, oh, I'm such a fan, you know, I'm fangirling.
You're
you.
A celebrity. Like,
it's just me.
No paparazzi, please. Well, how do you feel about the way that intuitive eating has taken off? It's kind of taken on a life of its own, especially on social media. You see a lot of people who haven't even read the book, but they love intuitive eating. What do you think about it?
Oh, there's so much to that. Well, first of all, as I just mentioned, it's been around for almost 30 years. The first edition came out in 1995. So, you know, people loved it and it kept growing. Obviously, the publishers would not have offered us new editions if it, you know, weren't popular. But I think it really started to take off perhaps maybe around 2020 or maybe before that, 4 years before that. I think that what was happening was during the four-year period from 2016 to 2020, there was a lot of denigration of women and other marginalized identities, and people started to become much more socially justice, you know, aware and aware of the patriarchy and sick and tired of being told how we should look, not only women, all genders, but how we should look and how we should eat. And I think that that was an opening, as well as recognizing that oppression of people in larger bodies is an oppression. I don't want to make value judgments, but I think equal to oppression in so many other marginalized identities. Is, yeah. So it's like, whoa, you know, we're sick of this. We're sick of being told we have to be thin. We're sick of being told that we have to, you know, eat quote unquote healthy food or good food or whatever the moral judgment is on it. So I think there was that piece. And then I think in 2020, when the pandemic started, I think something else added to it. I think the people were home more and started recognizing the pleasure of food and the quality of comfort that comes with eating. And I think started to get to a point where they didn't want to have to be told that they couldn't eat what they wanted to. And I recognize there were some people who came out of those first couple of maybe 2-3 years of it saying, oh no, I've been eating too much. But I think they wanted to preserve their freedom to eat what they wanted. So that may be it. There were 500,000 copies sold of Intuitive Eating back in 2020. At this point, there's over 700,000 copies. So it's getting out there somehow. And then you mentioned social media, which I think is a big piece of it. There wasn't social media back in 1995, you know, so it's a platform to talk about it. As you say, it does trouble me that there are people out there on social media claiming to be experts in intuitive eating, and they're not, and they're often giving out some, you know, some statements that are not aligned with intuitive eating. But there are also a lot of wonderful people who are promoting intuitive eating. And so I think that's another piece of it, is social media has, you know, been able to spread the word.
Yeah, there's good and there's bad.
We wanted to ask you about that, because it seems like, at least from our perspective, more than a few health coaches are out there. And they've used the same language and kind of the same terminology from intuitive eating to help their clients pursue weight loss. Have you noticed that trend? And what do you think about that?
I've not only noticed it there, but on some major, and I don't even want to use the name of one of the diet apps out there, that is, they're using
language. Really?
I actually saw words I have written personally that they've used. And, you know, there's nothing we can do about it. We consulted a lawyer saying, hey, this is not right. They're copying us. And the lawyer said, they've got so much money and so much power that you're just not going to be able to accomplish anything. It'll take too much of your time, energy, and, you know, money to do it. So
help who's
listening.
I just
figure these things kind of, fade out on their own, because people realize that it's not helpful for them and really toxic for them. So, but it is out there, and I'm mostly, I don't know, should say mostly. I mean, I'm very irritated with the big companies like the one I'm referring to, which, without using their name. Mm-hmm. But I am very upset with people who don't take the time and energy to really learn about intuitive eating. We have a certified intuitive eating counselor certification program. But at least, you know, get some supervision, learn about intuitive eating before you go out there and talk about it, because there's so many myths and it's so misinterpreted. Just as you were saying, you know, let's use intuitive eating to lose weight. Well, that's not what intuitive eating is about. It's the antithesis. It's the antithesis of it. And the idea of the hunger fullness diet, people who are, that's in quotes, you know, people who so badly want to have rules, and intuitive eating is about not having rules. So they create rules, you know, within the context of intuitive eating. You should only start eating when you're at a certain level and never go beyond your, you know, this level, and you should never eat emotionally. And it's all wrong. It's it's not the proper understanding of intuitive eating, and it shouldn't be out there. I once had maybe I saw it somewhere on the internet, this person who was a coach posing herself on her website, because I looked it up, in very revealing, you know, gym clothes, that just something we would never do or ever promote. And so I contacted her. I do this. I'm kind of feisty. I was a feisty toddler. I'm a feisty old woman.
Yes.
Now. And so I contacted her and I said, hey, this is just does not align with our values, isn't it? You know, and you're promoting intuitive eating. And I said, have you read the book? Well, no, I never read it. And I was astounded. You never read intuitive eating, yet in your title of your website, you've got intuitive eating, and you're posting pictures that are. So yeah,
that's got to be so frustrating for you. Emily and I get frustrated, and I'm like, I wonder how Elise feels. Like, it's got to be just a horrible feeling.
It's just so wrong. So I don't know whatever happened to her, but I told her no, she could not and should not represent intuitive eating. She probably still is. But.
Well, I did love what was in your power, which was sending a message. So
Love that you reached out to her. That's amazing. I was even talking in the intro for this show that we already recorded. I was talking about this person that I stumbled upon who she was actually telling people that intuitive eating would help them lose the last 10 pounds, which is the complete antithesis of what it's about.
Oh, it's such a disconnection from, you know, what we, our wisdom that we have inside of us. Mm-hmm. It's such a disconnection from social justice. It's just so wrong. You know, we cannot continue to promote this culturally thin ideal that is ridiculous, that does not, you know, fit the majority of people. And yet It's out there making people feel bad about themselves unless they're fitting into, you know, what diet culture, the rules of diet culture. So, yeah.
It's so hard to unlearn. I feel like people mixing intuitive eating with dieting, do you feel like that's also a part of people's like phase one into intuitive eating? Because I know like it's still tempting to say like, you know, somebody tries intuitive eating, but they miss the rules and they're like, well, let me just still cut down on sugar, but I'm intuitive eating, or let me
eat what I want, but not too much.
Yeah. Like, is that something people kind of have to like learn through not, by doing well, or?
Not if they read the book or they talk to me or they talk to any other of the wonderful counselors who have been certified out there. No, so wrong.
Right.
There's a lot of misinformation, and I hope not disinformation, you know, with purpose of putting people in the wrong, you know, lane around this, but definitely misinformation. And I believe in people and hope that they're just, misinformed rather than trying to harm people.
Right. Is the easiest way to spot a fake intuitive eating account if it's promoting weight loss? Would you say that's like the number one thing?
Yeah, if it's promoting weight loss,
okay.
Anything that smacks of weight loss or that smacks of any kind of rules that is, you know, separating certain foods from other foods, talking about healthy eating, that's also a, you know,
coded
red flag for it.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, I mean, intuitive eating is about trusting that wisdom that we're born with for the majority of us anyway, and getting back connected to it. So anytime that we're going by some external rules, it's an assault on our autonomy. Actually, you didn't ask me this question, but I think that the underlying psychological foundation for intuitive eating is autonomy. It's about listening to yourself, trusting yourself, not going for wisdom, which, you know, in quotes, outside of yourself. Mm-hmm. So any of these other, whether it's a full-fledged diet, whether it's just, you know, some ideas that some influencers have, this is the opposite of intuitive eating. It is not about freedom. It is not about trusting yourself. It's not about autonomy.
Emily and I were talking about how practicing intuitive eating, it kind of bleeds into your entire life. Like, you'll intuitively date, or you'll intuitively, you know, drink or quit drinking alcohol, or intuitively set up boundaries. Like, when I'm around this person, I feel bad.
Movement, like not doing exercises that you think you should be doing, like doing what actually feels good to you. It really does translate into other facets of your life.
I even thought at one point I would write a book called Intuitive Living.
Yes.
Because I didn't.
That's what we're doing.
But it is, because once you get more in touch with yourself and trust that intuition, that knowing inside of you is, you know, something to be honored, it's going to spread out into all areas. You're talking about drinking. So I can only drink 2/3 of a glass of wine.
Right?
That's all I can drink, because if I drink more than that, I start feeling it and it doesn't feel good. And then and I wake up in the middle of the night wide awake and I'm hungover the next day. I'm obviously a lightweight. But the point is so I drink intuitively, which is rarely and just a little bit.
It's like a drop.
Is it sad sometimes? Yeah, especially if it's a good Sauvignon Blanc from New Zealand.
Yeah.
That's my favorite. So yeah, if it enters into every area, you're absolutely right on.
Awesome.
You're cracking me up, because we just spoke about this.
Did.
We both, I mean, I went alcohol free like a year and a half ago. And just because I was noticing that it wasn't making me feel great in my body. Mm-hmm. And now Lauren is going through the same thing. And I really think it's connected.
Yeah.
More people would do it if they were a little more in tune with their bodies.
Yeah. Of course, I do want to say, if somebody has an alcoholic disease, you know, that's a whole other story.
Right.
They can't really drink at all. But we're talking about people who don't, who are really tuned in to how can I feel best? How can I live my best life? I don't want to lose sleep. I don't want to feel lousy, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
That includes me wearing masks everywhere I go. Sorry that I'm one of these people that's still very cautious. Knock on wood.
Great. Nothing wrong with that.
I still haven't had COVID, thank God. So.
Oh, wow. You're the last one left.
Probably.
Your patient's
weak. I don't want to get sick. I don't have time to get sick.
No, who does?
I don't blame you. I don't blame you at all. This episode is brought to you by Nuuly. Have you ever felt that fast fashion ick, but can't always find the super high-end stuff? I have a solution for you, Newly. Newly has everything you need to bring your closet up to speed for this season without breaking the bank. Free your closet of impulse purchases and skip the buyer's remorse by renting instead. Newly is a subscription clothing rental service. For just $98 a month, you get your choice of any six styles each month. Access to thousands of styles from more than 400 brands. There are no fees, late fees, damage fees, or fees to pause or cancel. They also have inclusive sizing up to 5X as well as petite and maternity. And you always have the option to buy what you love. I love Newly. I've rented so many cute things from there, and I've even made a few purchases from there. And they're always spot on. They have so many brands that I honestly could never afford in real life. So it's great to be able to rent them. Newly is a great value at $98 a month for any six styles. But right now, you can get $20 off your first month of Newly when you sign up with the code DST20. Just go to Newly, that's NUULY.com, and enter the code DST20 and sign up to get $20 off your first month. That's NUULY.com, Newly with two U's, with code DST20. Newly subscription clothing rental. Change your clothes. Now, I know from reading the book that you had observed things in your patients with your clients that led to this whole philosophy and different common experiences that they were having. What would you say somebody could identify within themselves that intuitive eating might be a good route for them to go?
Well, I think it begins with one's experience for years and years of trying to limit and restrict their food. And what happens? You know, it's not sustainable. So they go from one diet or restrictive plan to another and feel terrible about themselves. And they get to a point where they can't do it anymore, but then they don't know how to eat, you know? So they're very much looking for a guide, an external guide usually, but something that's going to help them know how to eat and feel good. And so when you get to that point where you can say, I can't do this anymore. I cannot be led by this, you know, diet culture. I want to feel better. I want to enjoy food. That's the point. I mean, many years ago, well before I was even aware of diet culture, I went to graduate school back in the 70s. And so I've been in private practice for 42 years and over 42 years at this point. And so I, in those early days, we were taught in graduate school to give meal plans. I mean, there was no understanding of eating disorders or the toxic impacts of dieting. I mean,
that's wild.
A long time ago. Right. So I started my practice giving people meal plans, and doctors were asking me to help people lose weight. And it was just a terrible, terrible time. And people just, they couldn't stay on these things.
Right.
They couldn't do it. So yeah, if any of your listeners are at a place where they realize that they've had it, they don't want to continue feeling bad about themselves, feeling physically bad, you know, feeling the highs of dieting and weight loss, and then the lows
guilt.
Of feeling the shame, the guilt. It's time to get off of that train, you know, and get and find a place within yourself that you can trust. It takes guidance. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that anybody can just do it, you know, that well. Let me step back on that. I've had a number of people who've read the book and have made changes on their own. I think it depends on how entrenched one is.
You guys have that workbook now too, which is...
Well, we are working on the second edition of it. Cool. Writing a book takes a long time and there's lots of edits. So yes, that'll be out probably at the end of the year. Second edition of that.
Exciting.
Also, I wrote an intuitive eating workbook for teens that has been out for a few years. And I wrote it in teen language, not just for actual teens, but for the teen in each of us. As I was saying to you earlier, I'm kind of feisty. I've got a really strong toddler teen in me. So a lot of adults have read that book and gone, oh, wow, this has really helped me go back to the time when this started. Because most people, not everybody, but this whole, I don't know, venture into dieting started as sometimes a kid. Some
absolutely.
Of my clients tell me they were 8 or 9, but teenagers anyway. Yeah, and there's a number of other books too attached to it. So, yes.
But ideally, if you have a, you know, intuitive eating certified registered dietitian in your network, speaking to the listeners, like that's also a great place to start. That's how I started, was weekly sessions.
Yes.
With Rebecca Ditkoff. Shout out.
Yeah, sure. I know Rebecca.
You know Rebecca? Well, she's the best.
Oh, sure.
She told me your message, and now here we are. So,
I'm so glad you found it, because now you have freedom.
Yeah.
And trust.
The way you talk about it is, it's emotional for me to listen to. Like, it's something, you know, I've been doing for 6 years now, but this conversation is really lovely, because it's like, oh, this is about autonomy and like trusting mm-hmm. yourself. Like, I love the idea that we have all the answers inside mm-hmm. of us. Like, that's beautiful. And we're taught, especially as women, don't trust yourself. Listen to the rules. Find somebody else to tell you what to do. And it's like, no, we have, the answers are here. And anyways, I think that's beautiful. That's not a question. That's just a,
it's just some praise.
Yeah, it's just
some
praise.
Thank you.
So Emily and I, actually, we give advice. I was going to say, like, we try to be so careful not to give advice, because we're not technically professionals. We're just personalities who experience life and everything. But you are mm-hmm. the expert. You are here. I know this is, you know, not going to be a one word answer, but to any of our listeners who are still kind of, you know, wanting to pursue weight loss and wanting to try a diet instead, like, could you talk about, you know, the benefits of testing out intuitive eating for the first time, like what those rewards look like? And, you know, because I think a lot of time people think about the word results, you know, and it's like, what if we reframe the word results from you lost weight right. to you feel great? Or could you speak to that?
Sure. And before I do answer that, I want to say, anyone who is out there looking for weight loss must have self-compassion.
Yes.
I have such compassion for the clients that come and see me, and they've been struggling all their lives. I never want them to feel shame.
Totally.
For that desire, because they've been brainwashed, essentially. By the way, the word cult is in the middle of diet culture. So I really believe that people, you know, have been indoctrinated into something. And so I start with helping them understand why they want that, and helping them look at what this has taken away from their lives. Mm. And then move on to showing them some of the benefits of intuitive eating. But if I don't start there, then people come in feeling bad about themselves.
Yeah.
Oh, I really shouldn't want to lose weight, you know. But it's like, well, how can you avoid that living in this culture?
Exactly.
How can you avoid it living in, you know, with the, in this patriarchal culture. Okay. I just wanted to say that before.
Well, no, it's the most relatable thing ever to want to lose weight as a woman in
totally.
Diet culture. Like, you're normal.
It's also, it's a bonding thing too. Like, we bond
yes,
over it. And so it brings women closer together, which, you know, I don't love, but it's true. It's a fact.
It creates community.
Well, yeah, and it's a fear of losing that community.
Right.
Is part of it, you know, because there's so many pros and cons to mm-hmm. someone who says, I can't do this anymore, but what am I going to lose out on now?
Right.
But here's the beauty of intuitive eating. As an intuitive eater, that shame goes away. That self-doubt goes away. Psychological hardiness is increased. Your coping skills are better. Reduced anxiety. More pleasure in eating. More satisfaction in eating. Freedom. I mean, I love to say you're going toward a place of complete freedom where you can trust your body, you know best. And mm-hmm. rather than having to, you know, 1 month trust something that fails and then going to something else, it's a constant, you know, kind of merry-go-round of going from one place to the next place, around and around in circles, where you never feel good. So intuitive eating just makes you feel good. And satisfaction is such a big piece of it. Plus, when I go back to self-compassion, and what I said earlier about some people think that there should be no emotional aspects to eating, you know, you should not eat emotionally. Eating is emotional.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the moment a baby tastes that milk, whether it's breast milk or formula or even a little sugar water, whatever it is, that sugar is soothing. Goes right to their brains and helps them, you know, increase their serotonin levels.
Yeah.
And so we're born to want to be soothed with food. And once we are given that sense that it's okay. I mean, every afternoon I make a cup of decaf coffee and whatever cookies I'm into at the time, because you know, it moves from, I have habituation. It goes from time to place to place, but it's soothing. It's lovely. And I'm not saying, oh, this is bad because this gave me comfort. So I think we have to look at the fact that food can be emotional. The question is this your only coping mechanism? If food is the only coping mechanism, it is leading people to a place where they actually end up not being present while they're eating, not getting that joy and pleasure out of it because they're feeling the shame for going beyond fullness or binging. They're feeling, they're feeling like, oh, they should never have that food again. And then they go on to more and more of that eating beyond, beyond fullness. And I think once you're free to enjoy food and get satisfaction and have that emotional pleasure, things change. I have a number of clients, even lately, I've had them over the years, but lately, women in their 60s, let's say, mm-hmm. who have been spending their entire lives angry at their bodies, angry at their eating, trying one diet after another. And as soon as we talk about intuitive eating in the way that I like to talk about it, mm-hmm. which is seeking satisfaction and pleasure, staying present, and taking away the shame, something magical happens. They just kind of stop, for the most part, my yeah. four favorite words, for the most part, they kind of stop having food as their only coping mechanism, because now they have the full permission. They have the autonomy to right. eat what they want, as much of it as they want, never going to be taken away from them. And by the way, sidebar, this also talks about privilege and access to food, because yes. there are many people in our world who don't have that. So I just want to make that statement, and we all have to be aware of, poverty in our world.
Totally.
But
thank
in any
you.
Case, if we do have the privilege and we do have the access to food, once you can have what you want when you want, there's no reason to have to go to that place of going beyond, because they find that it's not helping anymore. It was something that was, since it was forbidden, when they mm-hmm. were feeling bad, when they were having negative emotions that they couldn't handle, it was an excuse. Oh, now I get to eat that food. But since you get to eat that food anytime you want cookies for breakfast, go ahead.
Yeah.
Ask yourself how you feel. Does your blood sugar rise and crash? But, it's all your choice. So I have seen in people one after another, I have a fairly new client. I've seen her for about a month and a half, maybe. And she said to me, well, actually two of them that I can think of right now. Once you told me it was okay that I could soothe myself with food, funny things happening. I'm not eating so much as yeah. I was eating before. So, it's that sense of, yes, you're going to be able to trust yourself. No, you don't have to follow those rules. Mm-hmm. No, there's nothing wrong with you for wanting to get some pleasure and satisfaction.
It serves a purpose. That's I remember Rebecca telling me that. I was like, oh, I ate all this stuff and I was having a rough night. And she was like, well, did it make you feel better? Like, did it? And I was like, yeah. And she's like, well, then that food served a purpose. Like, it might not have been for nutrient rich nourishment, but it served a purpose that was for my mental health.
Well,
kind of.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so many of my clients have had so much trauma in their lives. I mean, we all have some levels of trauma, but they've had very serious trauma. This one particular client who was molested at age 5 and spent she was in her 60s when she came to me. Mm-hmm. Food was her enemy, and it was also the only place that she could go. And she right. felt so terrible about it. And what I say to people is, thank God you had your food.
Yes.
It's what got you through.
Exactly.
It's what gave you a place to go, a place of safety. And comfort, and mm-hmm. something shifts. I see it as I'm talking. I mean, I'm totally virtual in my practice now. After 40 years of having an office, I finally let it go last year. But it's kind of neat. I'm so close to them on the computer that I see their eyes.
Yeah.
And
oh, true.
Something shifts. Something shifts. You mean it's okay? You mean I wasn't doing something terrible? There was nothing wrong with me?
No,
you got through. Here yes. you are, 65 years old, a very successful professional who's still hating yourself and hating your body and feeling inadequate when this has been put upon you. So let it go. Go enjoy your food and soothe yourself. It's yeah. magical.
It is.
I bet there are some people listening and they're thinking, Elise, that sounds really nice for some people, uh-huh. but I am a uh-huh. food addict, or I am addicted uh-huh. to sugar, and it's not, I don't have trauma. Uh-huh. I just am addicted to uh-huh. food. What would you say to somebody who identifies as a food addict and they couldn't possibly imagine taking the rules away from food?
Okay. So there's a number of things. There is no science to support food addiction. I remember having a client many years ago who her favorite thing was to go to Disneyland. I'm here out in California, and she would get this particular cake that she loved and get 7 pieces of it. She'd go all around all day, and she went there constantly doing this and mm-hmm. felt that she was a food addict, a mm-hmm. sugar addict, that she couldn't stop. So once we number one, introduced lots of carbs, you know, cereal and bread and all kinds of other forms of carbohydrate, and took away the stigma about her wanting to have the cake. Wow, she didn't go through any withdrawal when she stopped eating that amount of sugar. Mm-hmm. You know, when people have an addiction to a drug, they typically go through withdrawal afterwards. Well, there was no withdrawal because mm-hmm. once she started eating oatmeal and, you know, and bread and all of that, she felt great. So there's that piece of, you know, of the refuting that there's such a thing as food addiction. And what I would say is take a look at these people who are telling themselves that they're addicted. How much restrictive thinking have they had all their lives, so that when they finally get their hands on a piece of cake or whatever, it's like, oh my God, I can't believe it. It's just, they've been so deprived that that's all they want. They want more and more and more of it as a result of the deprivation and the shame that they start to feel about feeling out of control. And then they keep doing it. And then the solution is to abstain from it. And so then they conclude that they were addicted to it. Even some of the studies done on food addiction, they don't even check to see whether people were dieting prior to getting into the study. Oh. So they give them this food and they can't stop eating it. And they go, see, this is food addiction. No, it's typically a result that out of controlness is a result of all that dieting, all that those years of deprivation and assault on autonomy. It's finally like, oh, you know, I'm not doing what they're telling me to do. And but then there's always this thought for some people, well, I'll do this now. I'll try this intuitive eating thing out now. And but then I'll, if it doesn't work, quote unquote, whatever work means, means for them, as you mentioned earlier,
lose weight.
Then I'll, you know, there's that other thing out there. I won't even mention any of those thousands of diets out there.
Right.
Well, the problem is, I think I said earlier, we have to be at a place where you're never going to go on a diet. You're never going to let somebody tell you what you should or shouldn't mm-hmm. eat or how much or when. And if there is some thought of it, I like to say the mere perception of future deprivation will get you to eat as much as you possibly can right now, because this is your only opportunity. And then that proves to you that, you know, you're out of control. So, it's got to be at a place where you say, no, I'm never going to do that again. The other piece of it that I want to tell your listeners, which is a very soothing thing for a lot of people, it's a concept called habituation. And I'm sure you read about it in the book. Habituation means the greater the stimulus, the less the response. So remember, people are thinking, I shouldn't have. Oh, I won't have that again. Oh, this is my one opportunity. Oh, I deserve it now because I'm upset. And then they think they're going to forbid it later. Well, once you take away all the forbiddenness, all the mystery of it, all the excitement of the forbidden fruit, so to speak, it's not fruit usually, then what happens when you take that away and it just becomes part of your life and you know you can have it forever, there's it just that sense of being out of control goes away. There's no reason. I think I mentioned this in the book years ago. I had a client who came to me the first time and wanted to start the journey. She said, what do I do? And I said, what's your favorite food? And she said, grilled cheese. And I said, okay, you know, let's, how about having grilled cheese every day? She said, wow, this restaurant here in Century City in LA has grilled cheese week. I'm going to go there. And so every day she went and had a different form of grilled cheese. When she came back the following week, I said, so how'd it go? She said, ugh.
She got tired of it.
Day, I just couldn't, I could not look at grilled cheese.
I've been there. So, yeah. You know,
right. So once it's, you know, not forbidden, once you have freedom to have it, and again, if you have access to it, then it just takes its place.
Yeah.
And you think about it I like to talk about how, you know, somebody meets a partner, a future partner in life, and they're just on that high, that limerence of those first, you know, couple of months of excitement, and you can't get enough of that person. Mm-hmm. And then you're with that person for 20, 30 years and they're wonderful and you love them and you have a good life together. But you know what? Let me take a weekend away.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
It takes away. Once it's no longer new and exciting and different and mm-hmm. you're never going to get it again or forbidden, it all kind of takes its place.
Could
it evens out.
Could I share something with Elise that... So I discovered this working with Rebecca Ditkoff, like maybe in my first year of intuitive eating. And I was, this detail doesn't matter, but I was cat sitting. I was always cat sitting back then. Mm. And
it's a good hustle.
It was a great side hustle. And one of my favorite parts about cat sitting was ordering takeout and like having it in this fancy apartment. Mm-hmm. And I did a call with her on like day 4. And I was like, I don't like any of this takeout. Like, it just, like, it's, you, this is usually so fun for me to come to the Upper West Side and, like, order this takeout. And I was like, what's happening? And she's like, well, you're allowed to have it all, so it's not as exciting. Right. So, like, right. Is that, you know, is the hardball question here, like, is that, like, a weird little downside of intuitive eating? Like, you lose the, like, this, I'm going to eat this thing from my favorite restaurant.
You know, that is your, yeah, that is a point you're making, because I say to people, I need to let you know.
Yeah.
Food is not going to be as exciting
anymore.
It
will not.
Maybe. No, what might be exciting is going to a new restaurant, experiencing the ambiance of it, being with people that you enjoy being with. That's where the excitement comes. And yes, being, you know, getting the pleasure out of the food, but it doesn't hold that forbiddenness, that magical,
right.
You know, high that you get when you think this is the only chance you have to have it.
That must be what food addicts are talking about when they feel like they're addicted. Because are there chemicals that are happening when you eat something that you're not supposed to be eating? Like, it releases something and that makes you feel like you're addicted to it?
Okay.
I guess.
Well, so eating does increase our dopamine levels, which is our pleasure high, you know, chemical in our brain. But so does music. So does sex.
Yeah.
So does many pleasure. So do many pleasurable things that raise dopamine. It's just that you don't continue to get as high a sense of dopamine out of the forbiddenness. Mm. It's just, it's pleasurable. It's wonderful. When you're done, you're done. Let me share with you, since you told a personal story. Back in my, I guess late 20s, early 30s, I had an eating disorder. Mm-hmm. And my eating disorder was dieting and binging, dieting and binging. I remember going to my therapist at the time saying, "Do you think I have an eating problem?" And she said to me, "Do you throw up?" And I said, "No, I don't." She said, "You're fine."
Oh my
God. I can't blame her. There was no knowledge about this in those days. But I remember feeling that there was nobody else in the world who could eat as much as I could eat, and that there was no end to the amount of food that would fill me up. Mm-hmm. And of course, I was only giving myself Saturday night to binge. You know, it was like the rest of the week I was trying to, I didn't even call it binging. You know, that was when I was going to allow myself, quote unquote, to have the foods I wanted. And the rest of the week I was restricting. And once I went through a lot of therapy, did a lot of change in my life, and started this psychological understanding of eating, I haven't had an issue with eating. And I just had a birthday yesterday. I'm 79.
Oh, happy birthday.
Thank you. It wasn't yesterday. It was Tuesday. Actually, I was lying. But I haven't had an issue with food for, 40, 50, you know, getting close to 50 years.
Incredible.
So I want to say this as a way of letting you know that I thought that I was never going to be different than I was in terms of feeling out of control, feeling bad about myself, feeling shame when I couldn't keep the control. So I'm sharing that personally so that people will know, yes, you can get through this.
Thank you so much for sharing that. I really identify to that. I think that people who have felt addicted to food, it does become kind of part of your identity, that you think, I just have this massive appetite and I will never be different. But there is, you know, hope on the other side. So I'm happy you said that. And another thing is, I feel like we're hearing about the whole food addiction thing a lot now that we're in the age of Ozempic. I'm sure you've been asked questions about this, but that's one thing that I keep hearing from people who have been prescribed Ozempic or similar meds for weight loss, is that it quiets the food noise. And the food noise is always going on, and I'm always thinking about food, but this helps me not think about it. Can somebody take these medications and still pursue intuitive eating, or does it kind of hijack that part of you that's able to do that?
Oh my God, there's so much to say to that. First of all, what's wrong with food noise? What's wrong with, you know,
AKA hunger?
You just have this. Yeah, right. Hunger, exactly. Hunger or pleasure or satisfaction. They're denigrating this sense of emotion. As I was saying earlier, it's wonderful to have emotion connected to eating. It's also, well, these drugs completely disconnect people from any natural sense of hunger or fullness.
Wow.
Let's get even beyond the fact that so many people have terrible GI, you know, side effects from them. Here's the truth. People are being malnourished with these drugs. You cannot get in enough food to nourish your body, to nourish your immune system. They're losing muscle. They're losing bone density. It's a very terrifying and scary era that we're in right now, that people are thinking it's a good thing to take these drugs. So I think that there are people who have to take them for diabetes. And mm-hmm. by the way, when people are prescribed this type of drug for diabetes, it's a much lower dose than the right. dose they take for this massive weight loss. Mm-hmm. And thank goodness thank goodness for modern pharmacology for certain things, you know, that I have a family history of high cholesterol. I've been taking a statin drug for 20 years. Thank goodness. It's going to, I hope, keep me from having a heart attack or stroke. So, you know, when there are drugs that are helping a medical condition, I applaud them.
Right.
However, if a person is focusing on weight loss when they're taking that drug, whether it's for a medical reason or not, they're going to get into that same old, you know, diet mentality. And I don't think the people who are on that drug are having quite the same reaction as people with, you know, diabetes, who are having the same reaction as people who are taking it for weight loss, because they're not having the massive amounts of weight loss. They might have a little bit of it, mm-hmm. but any focus on weight loss only externalizes any connection we have with our own wisdom. So, I mean, the answer is no, we cannot be focusing on weight loss under any circumstances.
Right.
I'm just worried. I'm really worried about what's going to happen in a few years when you're going to see high levels of pancreatitis because it's affecting the pancreas at the doses that are there.
Yeah.
And what kind of medical problems are going to show up as from a lack of nutrition, from the malnutrition that is mm-hmm. happening, especially bone density, especially, you know, postmenopausal women who are doing this because they just want to lose the weight that they gained right. during menopause. And then, I mean, bone density is jeopardized once you lose your estrogen.
Yeah, you're gonna shrink anyways.
Well, it's not just shrinking, it's broken bones. It's falling when you get older and being fragile. Mm-hmm. And so I just worry about it. And you probably are too young to remember the era of fenfen. That was a diet.
We know what we're educated.
I'm familiar with
diet culture history.
Okay. Well, you know, after a couple of years of that, people were having heart, lung problems. People
right.
were dying and they had
right.
to take it off the market. These semaglutide drugs, especially Ozempic, I think the others too, they're black label drugs on the mm-hmm. package. These are the drugs that they, you know, the pharmaceutical people are telling you are dangerous.
Right.
And people are taking them.
And it's all in the name of health too, which is so interesting because everything you're describing, these side effects sound unhealthy.
Unhealthy. And let me just say this. It's all bogus, this idea of weight being equated with health. It
totally.
Is not weight that causes ill health problems. Sometimes it's weight cycling. Mm-hmm. People who are on diets and lose a lot of weight and then gain it back and more and more and more as time goes on, as their metabolism slows down. Mm-hmm. There are studies that show that weight cycling increases risk of metabolic problems, heart disease, you know, diabetes.
Yeah.
It's pro-inflammatory, but it's not the weight. It's the weight cycling.
Right.
Or people who are so feeling such shame about their larger bodies, they'll often not go to the doctor
mm-hmm.
Because they don't want the doctor to say, because our medical community is so weight-centric.
Totally.
Oh, go lose 20 pounds. You'll be fine. Well, they've been trying to do that all their lives and they just avoid it. So they may miss a diagnosis in its early stages that could be treated. So, you know, that is where there's a connection. But mm-hmm. when you look at this horrible BMI, and I could go on forever about why it's so stupid and horrible, created by somebody who wasn't even a nutritionist, dietitian, medical person
right.
in any case. But if you look at it as just a comparison, the studies show that people in the overweight category, mm-hmm. and I hate that word overweight, but
right.
beyond what they claim is whatever they call it, healthy or normal.
Right.
When people are, that category of people live longer than the people in the quote unquote normal range. And the people in the next level, beyond the first level of overweight,
yeah.
where it's more than that, they live as long as the people in the normal level.
Wow.
So really the people who are beyond that, what they are considered to be, what you're supposed to be, they're living longer.
That's incredible.
So don't, you know, I don't want people telling me that weight is connected to health.
So much cognitive dissonance with this shit. Sorry, we almost didn't have an explicit episode, but like we have this information, but why is the medical community so like gung-ho on, you know, promoting weight loss with these patients? It's like, we have the info now. Like, are they not reading? What's going on?
No, they're not. I mean, there's a lot of stuff. There's a, and this could be another whole episode, the racial origins of weight stigma and fat phobia, way back for years, denigrating people of color because they had were in bigger bodies, you know, which was reinforcing a belief in racism, you know. And it was the patriarchy again. I keep using that. I'm an old school second-wave feminist. So, you know, it's so who were the doctors up until more recently? They were men, you know.
It was racist dudes.
It hasn't been that long that other genders became doctors.
Yeah.
And so it's been perpetuated. And then the connection with Big Pharma and the desire to sell drugs and make money. It's capitalism. It's the whole capitalistic industrial complex.
That's why obesity is a disease, so to speak, so you can sell drugs for it, because it's to cure the disease of just existing in a bigger body.
I was watching a panel. Actually, Oprah was on the panel, and there were these doctors who were promoting these drugs for weight loss.
Right.
And they were talking about, quote unquote, the disease of obesity.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the doctors was asked, well, do you have a certain weight that you're trying to get your clients down to? And she said, oh, no, weight is not the issue. I have this person, I don't want to use numbers, but in quite a large body, who has got all of her metabolic numbers are wonderful. And they said, well, how could that be? Well, she doesn't have the obesity disease. She just has obesity, quote unquote. I mean, it was just so ridiculous. It is not a disease. And it makes me very angry that it was approved by a committee in the American Medical Association to call it a disease. Maybe they were looking for insurance coverage. But even when people get insurance, they have to report, you know, how much weight loss there is. It's just, it's sickening.
Right. Well, sickening. That's actually what I was going to ask you is, how does something become categorized as a chronic disease? Like, what are the qualifications for something to be a chronic disease? It does confuse me how we got here, that now obesity is a chronic disease.
Are they doing causation rather than correlation? That's what's happening?
Yeah. They're saying that, and there's a big difference between causation and correlation. You know, like, as I was saying, that people maybe who have been weight cycling and they're at the largest size they've ever been, and they also have metabolic problems. And then they say, well, see, see, they're this size and that's correlation. But it's not causation. It isn't causation. They're looking at it incorrectly. I'm sorry. I think I missed your question.
No, that's okay. I just, I'm seeing this everywhere, is that, you know, obesity is now a chronic disease. And some people feel like I think it has given some, I also don't like to use that word, but people who are in that category, it's giving some people a sense of freedom, it seems, because they tell themselves, oh, my weight is not my fault, the way that they had perceived it to be their fault before. But it's very, very stigmatizing to say, well, you have a disease.
Well, I mean, I don't know what the medical association's criteria are for what is a disease and what isn't, but certainly not a person's size does not qualify as a disease. You know, maybe if there is a genetic problem, there's something like cancer. But I don't know the specific criteria, but certainly not size. That is not. So I can't really fully answer your question, but
that's okay.
That is an answer.
That is an answer. I mean, I felt like it was a little twisted, and it seems like it is a little twisted.
It's twisted.
So if somebody was taking one of these medications, while we're on that topic, for type 2 diabetes, would that interfere with them being able to be an intuitive eater or not, because the dose is lower?
Okay, this is a very good question, because it's not simply for that, but it's for many medical problems where there might be, you know, some food. Mm. Let's take celiac disease. A very small percentage of the population is celiac, but they truly cannot eat gluten. That's the only group that cannot eat gluten.
A lot of people think they can't eat it.
Yeah, I know, because they've been so brainwashed. Studies are showing that there's a study that recruited people for a gluten study, and they took three groups And they gave one group a high dose of gluten and another group a medium dose and one no gluten. And when they got done, everybody had stomach problems, even the group that didn't have the symptoms, because they figured they were being recruited for a gluten study. So they must, you know, there must be gluten in it. Anyway, in any case, you know, there are medical situations where you're certain things you just cannot eat. But that's just maybe one food, because like with the gluten or with that statin drug that I take, I can't eat grapefruit. I'm so sad. I love that. But the point is that you, but the point is, which is kind of ironic, isn't it? But anyway, the point is that how many of the grapefruit diet that was
such
on
such a that's diet all the food.
In any case, I think that yes, you absolutely can be an intuitive eater. It's about radical acceptance, which is one of my favorite ways of thinking about life. Things that you cannot change, accepting it in every cell of your body and making peace with it. It reduces suffering. So you're able to say, let's take the person with celiac who can't eat gluten. Okay, I understand. I just can't eat these foods because they're poison to my, you know, to my GI tract. I've seen people very sick until they were diagnosed with celiac. Mm. And then all the rest of the intuitive eating principles, remember, there are 10 of them. So yeah, maybe they can't eat every single food they'd like to get their hands on, but they can look at hunger. They can look at fullness. They can look at satisfaction. Especially with this with celiac in this era. Oh my goodness, there's so many gluten-free foods for people. Back years ago when I treated people with celiac, they'd have to order a bread across the country and it would come stale and awful. So at least, you know, but there are certain things you just make peace with, and you feel the sadness of not being able to have it because it's medically, you know, or physiologically not okay for you. And but then you're still respecting your body, you're still working on your emotions, you're still, you know, looking at how movement feels. That's one of my biggest bugaboos. I know I'm going off script here. Not that we
love
script,
it.
But back, you know, in the world, I'm a certified eating disorder specialist. And in the world of eating disorders, it's often said, oh, you can't use intuitive eating with an eating disorder. And I'm like, because people can't really get their accurate hunger and fullness signals. Right. Not until they're fully nourished. But what about the other 8 principles of intuitive eating? So intuitive eating is broad. There are many aspects of it. It's not just about hunger and fullness. So, so yes, you can, if somebody is prescribed a drug like that, it's probably not going to fully take away their hunger and fullness the way it is for somebody who's taking it for weight loss problems. So they can still be in touch with what foods feel good, what foods are satisfying, be aware of other hunger signals besides their stomach telling them they're hungry. You know, maybe their concentration is being affected or they're feeling a little, you know, dizzy or lack of energy, things like that. So there's other ways of detecting how your body feels rather than just exactly what your stomach's telling you about hunger and fullness.
That makes a lot of sense. Thank you. We did get a question from a listener this week, and it was related to weight loss, and we didn't feel that comfortable answering this question. So I wanted to run
it
by
you. It's kind of a gotcha.
Basically, we had a listener write in, and we've had others before that we're not confident in answering this question, but who want to lose weight, but simply for mobility reasons. This particular person wrote in and said, I have friends that go on these big, long bike rides and they go on these really complex hikes and challenging, you know, sports. And I feel like I can't keep up with them and it would be easier if I was in a smaller body. What would your advice be to somebody going through that?
Okay, so I have two things to say. One of them is that it's not always one size that determines whether you are able to do some of these physical things. I know people in very large bodies who are very fit and very capable of doing many physical things. And I know people in very small bodies who have knee problems or back problems who, you know, so it's not all, we can't just, you know, reduce it to size is going, if you change your size, you're going to be better at doing these activities. So that's one piece of it. The other piece, and this is something I like to say now to everybody who comes into me with all their ideas about healthy, this food is good or that food is bad or my body will be different. I like, my favorite word now is sustainability. So even if it were true, even if it were true that you'd be more able to do these long hikes at your friends, and I'm not saying I believe that that's necessarily the case, but let's say it were true. there is no sustainable way to focus on, you know, to lose weight if you're focused on weight loss and maintain it. If you're a doctor and you're telling somebody to lose weight and this is not something that is attainable or sustainable, you know, maybe it's attainable in the short run, but it's not, you are causing harm and you are promoting the oppression of people in larger bodies and you are not looking at the person's psychological and emotional state.
Yeah.
You with me?
So do you think that the doctors who are prescribing weight loss, do you think they're not aware of those studies or do you think they're just brainwashed in medical school to think, tell people to pursue weight loss?
Yeah.
Yeah, wow, fascinating.
I think diet culture and big pharma and all that. So what I say is, what are the things that you can do in your life that do feel good to you? What are the ways in which you can increase your strength and your agility and your balance and things like mm-hmm. that? Let's work on that rather than thinking, no, I can't do it because of my weight and I just have to lose weight. And acknowledge that there is no way. We could do a whole episode on why diets don't work and why restriction doesn't work. But people who lose weight on, you know, any kind of restrictive plan, 95 to 98% of them gain all the weight back. And after 2 years of weight loss, 2/3 of them gain even more weight.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it's not sustainable. So get it out of your head.
Right.
So well, with compassion.
I didn't want to say it. Thank you for saying it. That's why we asked you.
But that's such a great answer because it's kind of like no matter what your reason is, look at the science, look at the statistics, the studies that have been done, and it's you're probably not going to achieve long-term success with it anyway. So we might want to go a different route.
Exactly. And the few people, that little percentage of people who do, well, they typically have an eating disorder. They're mm-hmm. now in a very restrictive mode where they, you know, where they just don't let themselves have what they want. And they probably have a very obsessive compulsive eating disorder. So
thank you so much for joining us today.
You.
This was really illuminating. Oh. And I think our listeners are going to love it. I loved it.
I loved it.
I love talking to you. It's great. So anytime.
We'll do this again. That would be amazing. Yeah. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much. Where can people find more from you?
So I have my own website, which is EliseResch.com. I've got all kinds of things on there, podcasts I've done and things I've written and explanations of intuitive eating. There's also the intuitive eating website, which is intuitiveeating.org, that talks about a lot of the studies, which now we have over 200 scientific studies that validate intuitive eating as an evidence-based process for increased health, you know, mental and physical health. I'm kind of on Instagram, like I'm not very techie. So I just take things that other people do and I put them on my story with the credit to who they are. Mm-hmm. And that's at Elise Resch. I'm not really much on any other social
media. Give her
media.
A follow anyway. Oh, and the book.
Yeah, buy a book, guys.
Yeah, all the books. Intuitive Eating, 4th edition. Make sure you get the 4th edition. Eventually there'll be a 5th, but wait, we've got to finish this book first. The Intuitive Eating Workbook, my Intuitive Eating Workbook for teens. I also wrote an Intuitive Eating Journal. And there's an Intuitive Eating card deck, which I have here somewhere. Which is so much fun. It's kind of like a tarot card deck. You just pull out a card and that's what you need to focus on.
Oh, we'll do that on an episode. That sounds fun.
I love that. I didn't know about these cards.
Yeah, I would suggest that you read the book first, though, because this cannot really fully teach you intuitive eating.
Right.
It's a really nice tool.
Thank you, Elise.
See you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's it for today's episode. Be sure to send your questions to dst@betches.com to get them answered.
Follow us at Everything's Fine on Instagram. If you like this episode, please write us a review. And don't forget to check out our DST merch on shop.betches.com. Rate, review, and subscribe to the show. And follow me at Lauren Hope Crass.
Follow me at Lubination. And remember, we're always with you.
Through thick and thin, honey.
Diet Starts Tomorrow is produced by Rebecca Steinberg and Lauren Hope Crass. Editing by Rebecca Steinberg. Social media by Lauren Hope Crass. Guest booking by Allie Friedlander. Be sure to follow Diet Starts Tomorrow on all socials and send us your emails to dst@betches.com or your voicemails to 212-287-5650. Betches.